Hello, hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, and I'm thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Oh boy, so much goodness. We are here with a theme to basically make our lives better. And the prayer that comes daily for me is very simple. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, I know, major goal, but let's go for something big and on the path. One piece here, one day, one week. We keep adding things in to bring us closer and closer. And, oh boy, we've got a special show today. Before we get into that, just a moment to invite you. The sponsor of the show is AdvancedLiving.com, home of the comfort technology. Customers call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers because when you plug it in, it looks like a plain clock that tells time, but it brings a harmonized energy like having the Dalai Lama show up in your room and meditate there. And it deals with mitigating the stress of the electric pollution we live in from all the electronic equipment, as well as raising a healing field of energy. So check out AdvancedLiving.com. And now, oh boy, I know it's hard to get your attention if we're talking about, politics or religion, but what if we were talking about Tantra and sacred sexuality? Yes, that's our theme for today. And of course, it's about not just that, but taking intimacy to a whole new level. And that's really a bottom line for most of us. Yes, we love sex. Yes, we love the stimulation. But what about the wonderful intimacy, not only with a partner, but feeling great within ourselves and connected to spirit at the same time? Well, wouldn't it be fun to have someone that's got about 30 years experience at helping to create this? Yes, you tuned in just at the right time. Our wonderful guest, Michael Myrdad. He's a world-renowned spiritual teacher, healer, and author with an extensive background in spirituality and healing. And he's the author of the best-selling book, Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss, and You're Not Going Crazy. I love this title. You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. And his latest book, Healing the Heart and Soul. And Michael is regularly featured as a keynote speaker at some of the world's largest conferences, as well as being on radio, television, and various internet programs, in addition to being the cover story in Evolve magazine. Michael has been featured in such magazines as Yoga Journal, Sedona Journal, and Whole Self Times. And Michael has traveled throughout the world conducting thousands of classes, lectures, and workshops on spirituality, relationships, and healing. and is one of the few teachers in the Western world with over 30 years of tantric teaching and practice. He is the leading facilitator and advocate of spiritual tantra, or what is referred to as middle path tantra. Michael's vast knowledge and wisdom, combined with his personal warmth, humor, and integrity, have earned him the title of Teacher's Teacher and Healer's Healer from students and teachers and authors around the world. And Michael is not only a respected spiritual teacher, but is also one of the most intuitive and successful healers and counselors, which we'll talk about his practice, that you can actually turn to him for some support. And his powerful, insightful private sessions have transformed the lives of thousands of clients. So let's get ready. Hello and welcome, Michael.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Ah, just thrilled and excited.
It sounds like it.
Yes. I'll tell you, folks, when you get his book, Tantra and Sacred Sexuality, in your hands and you start looking through this thing, I mean, it's a whole new world that opens up. Now, Michael, you've been doing this for 30 years, but what got you interested in studying Tantra and or sacred sexuality, and how do all these coincide with the other things that you teach, such as spirituality and healing?
Well, in actuality, you know, we say so often that the universe is really one. Spirit is one. Consciousness is one. The whole universe is one unified field, or one universe, which means one song. So the universe is just one song. And so oneness, you know, it permeates all things. Well, so do all these topics originate as one consciousness. So they're really not separate topics. And that's one of the things I'm grateful for. In somehow it was instilled in me as I was growing and developing spiritually, even as a young guy. Somehow that was coming to me, that everything just makes sense. Everything comes together. Everything fits in just right. And if you just look from a spirit's view instead of down in the trenches where you're looking at, you know, narrow tunnel vision, if you get back far enough and you look at everything objectively and lovingly, you see how it all kind of blends and makes sense and connects. So really, all the topics blend. You know, so if we were talking about healing, how could you really discuss healing, I mean, as fully as possible, holistically, and not end up in the topic of energy systems? And if you're into energy systems, how do you not end up into yoga or kundalini? And if you're there, how can you not talk about sexual energy? And how do you not talk about sexual health? How do you not then branch into relationships and then eventually onto something else like communication? Every topic fits in with other topics, no matter what. I mean, one time I was doing a lecture many years ago in Minneapolis, I think it was, about 10 years ago. And, you know, somebody mentioned something to the effect of how I tend to teach by connecting so many things, diversity or eclectic or whatever you want to call it. I see it as oneness more than eclecticism. And this guy challenged me in the audience. He says, well, and when I was saying everything connects, and he says, well, how do you connect sexuality with Atlantis? He just threw this out there or whatever. And I said, well, and he threw it out. So I said, well, here's how. And I talked about sexual practices in ancient civilizations, such as Lemuria and Atlantis. I mean, I only did a brief answer because I knew he was just throwing that out there to be goofy. But, you know, and I had to get things back on track. But the point is, it would be, if you know enough and understand enough and are capable of intuiting answers, as it were, channeling, it's really impossible to not see the connectedness of all things. But that's definitely, so that's kind of what happened for me. And I just saw one thing led to another. And I also had a couple of key teachers, a yoga teacher early on when I was, I think, still in high school. There was actually a gal that I knew that was already somehow naturally tantric, and she was wanting to talk about it and share it with someone, and she got to talking to me about it, and because I was into healing, I could explain some things to her from that perspective, and so on. So, you know, I sort of learned a little bit about the tantric energies and so forth from her even back then, and then a yoga teacher shortly after that was also a student of Tantra, and in fact a master, and kind of kept that to herself. But she was Asian and was happening to be in Southern California, where I lived for a bit of time, and and she started demonstrating things and showing me things and explaining things. And so I started really studying then and practicing then. And then it went a lot on my own, and then started teaching it, you know, soon after that, and then have been developing it since. But I also bridged that with Taoist practices that I studied, brought that, the Taoist, which is several spokes of the Taoist philosophy, and one of them being Taoist sexology. So I brought that together and bridged it with the Tantra, and then continued studying and finding so many pieces of sacred sexuality. That's why, and I actually have two books. One is Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss. The other is an introduction to Tantra and sacred sexuality. And in reality, the bigger one is like a manual. It's Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss. That has a lot of the text that the other book has, but has all the technical stuff, all the exercises and techniques and so forth. So that's a lot more intelligent, a lot more like a workbook. But you can just basically tell the title, Sacred Sexuality, is in both books. Because to me, all the practices fit under that one umbrella, sacred sexuality. Whether it's Taoist or Tantric or whatever else, it's still under that umbrella of sacred sexuality. So I use that term more often, even more often than Tantra. But my definition of sacred sexuality, and everybody might have their own, my definition, what seems to work for a lot of people, is basically that for something sexual especially, but any category, even healing, for it to be called sacred, it has to fit under five categories. It has to fit and suit five categories. One is it has to have an element of love and respect. So I don't mean you have to be in love. I'm saying it has to have a component of love and respect. For it to be sacred, even if it's sacred cooking, it has to be done with love and respect. Secondly, there needs to be a component of safety. Not only in sexuality, not only safe sex practices, but safety, like the respect, love and respect now becomes something practiced or put to a practical sense of its safety. It means if something, you know, doesn't work for me, I'm not going to do it. I need to maintain a feeling of safety, or else I cannot grow in consciousness. I cannot expand in my trust and so forth. So safety's got to be there. That's the second item. Third is responsibility. If I'm not safe, I need to be responsible and do something about it. A lot of practitioners, students of Tantra and sacred sexuality, they feel kind of sometimes taken advantage of, especially if they're a little bit less liberal and a little bit scared and turned off by some of the practitioners and so forth that are out there. But I say, hey, you know what? You need to practice responsibility and say no to things that aren't working. Don't go forward on things and then blame the teacher later. Mind you, the teacher might need to look at some things and might need to hold responsibilities, but the students also have to have responsibility, or the event, the experience is not sacred. The fourth item is to communicate. So you need to not only be responsible, but you need to communicate that to your partners. But also communication means, you know, through sounds, and it could be whispers, moans, tones, or words, that what you like and what you don't like. And once you have those four, love and respect, safety, responsibility, and communication, the fifth one is now natural. It's called trust and surrender. And you'll never, in my opinion, as I teach, you'll never really be able to trust and surrender, which is the bliss that now can come from a sacred experience. You'll never have that without those other components. If something's missing, if I fail to communicate, how blissful can my experience be? If I'm not being responsible, if I'm not feeling safe, and if there's not a love and respect, how could it really be sacred? So that's one of the things that I teach in either of those two books, but that's one of the things, one of the premises is to what I teach, to make something be referred to as sacred sexuality. It's got to have those components. And I also recommend, I'll say one more thing on that, one other thing I recommend people learning or studying or practicing Tantra or sacred sexuality, please remember that there's a few stages you might want to consider as a teacher or student, practitioner or recipient, client. The first is, instead of thinking that sacred sexuality or Tantra is about the act of sex or intercourse, it first should be called communication. First, we know each other, get to know each other, communicate what your background is, how, you know, where are you coming from? Because if I skip this first stage of the actual act and process of Tantra, the experience, if I skip communication, thinking, well, let's just go and be intimate, let's share the experience, we're really making a huge mistake. You're missing the essence of what the person's about, especially their history, and not to mention, you could be really getting yourself into some danger, because if you have wounds that I care not about, I don't care enough to ask you about them and get some history, and a lot of practitioners in Tantra are not trained at all in how to get that information or what to do with it. Now, other extremes, mind you, if you go to the other extreme of counselors who are trained in getting information but have no sense of interest or whatever, are a little bit paranoid or judgmental about intimate contact, then you're at the other extreme. Now all you do is talk with no intimacy. So sacred sexuality really means a bridge of so many things, and one of them is to communicate. So we have to get to know each other. Secondly, you might, instead of just talk therapy, as it were, the second stage is, can you take your client, friend, whatever they are, to a stage of touch, meaning some body work. Now, that might mean internal body work, which some practitioners use. But I ask you, before we go internally, which is where a lot of practitioners just say, hi, nice to meet you, just lie on my sacred mat here, and I'm going to do some G-spot massage or some sexual work. To me, that's completely negligent and irresponsible, but it's not a big deal, because what it tells me is that the practitioner doesn't know anything more. That's their repertoire. They learned how to rub a part of the body. It's all they know, and therefore, whoever would choose to go to them might want to consider, again, loving, respect, you know, safety, responsibility, and so on. But the second category in practicing is hands-on, and that could mean body work, massage work, could mean internal work, but only if needed. And besides the hands-on, the third category, yes, indeed, as much to the chagrin of many people that are, you know, a lot more stringent on their rules and a little bit old-fashioned or whatever you want to call it, they would cringe at the idea. But there is a valid art, called sacred sexuality, wherein people might practice basically intimate sharing. And there is, sexuality can be very healing. Conscious sexual experience can be very healing. And yet, we have to wonder, you know, who's the person you're touching? Who's the person you're making love to? This is a person who's been through lifetimes of experience, and you're having, you know, this sacred opportunity to share with them. So there's so much that should be basically a stage, as it were, set, an arena, an atmosphere, and so on, to create a real sacred space for that sharing, and it can be a very incredibly healing thing. With it can come a lot of emotion and a lot of attachment and other feelings. So you really have to be well-versed in what you're doing, but the third category is intimate sharing, and I will say this much. Intimate sharing can be done either from a place of, I'm working on you and we're sharing intimately, to the category of, I'm no longer teaching you. We're now sharing as equals. And I think there's a distinction that needs to be made between those two, because there's people out there that charge for tantric work, of course. And so some of them have the absolute most wonderful training and the best of integrity and intention, and a lot of them do not. What percentage, I couldn't tell you, but I'm going to say it's, you know, 60-70% not. And another 10-20% would like to have the right training, and they're just, you know, they just don't. And so very few, it leaves, you know, a small percentage, unfortunately, that, you know, of people that are well-trained and, you know, with the proper integrity and so forth. I don't mean to talk down to the art. The art is fantastic. I'm just saying that to find those with the highest integrity, I mean, this is true for any category, whether we're talking about film directors or we're surgeons.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that just do their thing. They just do it. I'm doing surgery on you. I'm selling you a dinner today. People, often most human beings, just do. And it's a smaller percentage that know how to be. And in the sacred sexuality, it's the true, the truth maintains. It remains, very few really know what it means and what they're getting themselves into. Very few know how to see energy, and very few are trained to know what to do with wounds, like abuses and sexual abuses and so forth, to know it. And I've literally had more than one tantric practitioner, quote, healer, say to me, well, Michael, we really don't pay much attention to their old wounds, because when they're sharing intimately, the orgasm and the bliss that comes from the sexual expression and experience, it just overrides all that, and because you're just blissing out. Well, that's just absolute lunacy. You know, that's why they don't get credibility and why they don't get respect from counselors, because it's so inaccurate. But it's very irresponsible and it's very dangerous. So, as you hear from me, I tend to sort of fall into the middle here between, you know, I'm spiritual sexuality, as it were, spiritual tantra. One extreme of tantra is hypersexual. Lots and lots of sex addicts hanging out, doing we do everybody whenever we want to. It's just freedom, freedom, freedom. Learn to say yes, make love, do whatever. It's really a nice premise, nice theory, nice fantasy that we could have such a thing, you know, on Earth, where people could just be and share. Typically, that's not actually the intentions behind it. We have a lot of hypersexuality, a lot of dangerous behavior, and so on. But I'm not trying to sound, you know, all Victorian on you here. I'm just saying the other extreme, which is spiritual or religious tantra versus hypersexual tantra, is actually the Dalai Lama, for example. He is a practitioner of tantric Buddhism, but yet you don't see a lot of hypersexual behavior there. You see robes and celibacy and so on and so on. So that's one extreme of tantric work. The other extreme is this, you know, crazy hypersexual behavior, and all I'm doing is teaching middle path tantra. It means engage in spiritual connectedness, love, respect, and all these wonderful spiritual sublime concepts and energy, and at the same time, allow yourselves to experience intimacy and sharing, but it's all done with a loving, respectful kind of connection. And on that note, I should add that when I'm speaking as a person on this, a teacher on this, what I do mostly is teach people how to work on this and develop this, and I've written books on it now. Anymore, it's, you know, I'm constantly traveling and working, and a lot of people, it's kind of funny, a lot of people, if they hear your program or if they see that I've written a book on Tantra, they just assume that, like every other Tantric practitioner, they book an appointment, and I'm swearing to you, some of your listeners are going to think I'm making this up. People will book a session. I don't blame them, because this is what goes on in the world. They book a session, they show up, and they're actually expecting to have sex. And that is not a bad thing. It is not a good thing. I'm just saying it just is. And what is amazing about it is it's because that's all they've had before. They've booked sessions of tantric with tantric teachers and so on. They've gone to these teachers. The teachers say, nice to meet you, namaste, here's my sacred chamber. If you'd remove your clothes over here, I'll get you some water. And have you done this work before? And they start, you know, okay, let's do some work, some chanting, and then eventually hands are all over the person or doing some sexual work on them, and the goal is often orgasm. It's really a kind of new age prostitution, in a sense. It's kind of, yeah, you know, you say namaste, you might chant for a moment or say a little sacred prayer, but the goal is really not about the person and being and experiencing and sharing and spirituality. It's, well, one way or another, I'm going to end up touching you, hoping that you have an orgasm. You're going to be very pleased because I've done something, quote-unquote, special for you. And you're going to be happy about paying me. And so I'm making a living, you know, doing something I enjoy doing. Even worse than that are the people that not just work on you, because that I respect a lot. It's the people that actually just want to get to the point of having intercourse with you. And I think it's completely inappropriate, not because I'm judging sexuality. I'm judging the intentions at times of people as being inappropriate. So it can happen that something fantastic can be shared. And people have, you know, very commonly come to me and say, can I share this? My goal, I say to them, wait, first, if I were ever even to consider such a thing, first, we need to talk, connect. I need to learn about you, because we might be able to heal just by this, by talking, by prayer, and whatever else. Secondly, rarely we have to go to the second level where I ever even have to do work on anybody. And that could mean even just pushing a couple points in the body, a wave of the hands, energy work. I do, you know, the Qigong type of healing or just spontaneous energy work. So hands-on healing might take care of it. I don't have to have sexual contact to do sexual healing. Can it be done? Yes. All I'm saying is it's something that has to be progressed to, and I recommend it to your listeners, whether they're practitioners, healers, you know, sexual healers, or clients of. Please remember to honor the progression, because it's something that's so sacred, it should be given time.
Yes. Now I understand more about what you mean by that middle path of the Dalai Lama at one end of things that is certainly spirit only and no physical interaction, and then the other end of it where there's just about the physicality and not necessarily the sacredness of the spirit underlying all of it. So you're talking about middle ground is fabulous, and I'm excited because when you shared those principles in your book, An Introduction to Tantra and Sacred Sexuality, early in the book, page 10, it's getting into these essentials of sacred sexuality, and this is where people can go back. There's the safety, responsibility, communication, trust, and surrender that you spoke about earlier, and I love how that's at the very beginning of the book, and then your quote from, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, Osho?
Correct.
That says, unless you go beyond your biology, you will never know your soul.
That's right. That's there's a couple of things that I've said in conferences. I'm invited to speak as a keynote at Tantra conferences pretty regularly. I'd say every year, actually. But there's a couple of things that disturb some of the attendees the most that I teach. And I'll say it's fairly simple to recollect which ones seem to trigger. Now, not all the attendees, but the hypersexual attendees, because there's always a mixture of real sincere people, really this, you know, real extreme this and that and the other. And there's always, you know, people that are there basically to get lucky and to take advantage of people, and that does happen there. And there's some amazingly sincere, loving, advanced souls as well. Really, really good energy on some of these people. But there's clearly the other. And when I'm talking about love, respect, and all these more or less boundaries, or call them rules, guidelines to calling something sacred, you can see that the people that are into, you know, doing their thing, they start to fidget, they start to get a little annoyed. So that's one thing that does bother them. Another one is saying things like, look, please reconsider charging for your sexual work. I know you have to make a living, so I respect it. So I'm not telling you not to charge. I'm saying just think about it, because it is illegal in most areas, and just be careful, but think it through. But I also say to them, and even if you charge, okay, fine. Try to consider something, though. There's a couple more pieces to all this, and that is you don't have to jump to sex and intercourse. You do not. Reconsider deepening your practice to where you can learn to heal people by just doing energy work. I'm not saying don't have sex. Do what you want. But I'm saying there are ways to expand your consciousness through expanding your skills and vice versa. And your clients could get many times more of the effect, you know, as opposed to just always having the same one technique and it's always sexual. It doesn't have to look like that. But so I say things like this and people get a little fidgety. But believe it or not, the probably three out of the top five authors, facilitators, teachers in the world, in the Western world, I should say, tantric teachers in the Western world, actually not only engage with their clients who pay them really, high dollars for tantric sessions, but three out of five of them actually get their clients high first. They get them on ecstasy, they get them on acid, they get them on mind-altering drugs. Now, you know, you can do what you want. I don't care. I don't have any judgment about it one way or the other. What I'm going to say is just this, and this kind of disturbs some of these people. I'm saying, listen, when you get a client or student altered in consciousness, besides all the crazy potential hazards to that, that it should be so obvious to anybody with a brain. But besides all the besides all the obvious, I know I get a little facetious and silly. I hope you don't mind. But besides the obvious, I say, do you realize that when you're doing that, you're altering their mind and chemistry? Then you're engaging with them sexually, making them then think that it's you. That's the magic, because you've altered their mind. Their body's going to actually inadvertently become addicted to you. They're actually going to, the chemistry of their body is going to think, at the end of the day, whatever just happened was you, because your chemistry was now mixed with me when my mind was altered. It's almost like a very negative form of hypnosis is what they're practicing. I know that there are practices, like peyote amongst Native Americans, that is very valid, very authentic. First of all, it's been practiced for thousands of years. So they have a little more foot up on things than you do when in lately, you know, you got like 10 years, 20 years of getting people high or whatever. They got a foot up on you on that one, man. They've been doing this for a long time. Secondly, they're not setting the intention of getting you wasted and having sex with you. So when they use that one on me, I say, no, I'm not going to buy it. You're not a shaman master. You're a sex addict, man. And what you're doing is not really healthy. So, you know, I speak kind of openly about these things, but at the same time, please, you know, I'm not meaning to be on your show and be an advocate against what's not healthy. There's a lot of healthy components, and so when we speak about what is healthy, what it can Tantra be if it's done right, first of all, it's not all the magic of getting somebody getting you high. It's not the magic of somebody who wrote a book or this or that. It's any two people that put aside everything else in the moment that they're being intimate, and it could be, I could be holding your hand and making love with you in a more real and mind-altering, body-altering, and just profoundly experiential experience, I should say, for you by holding your hand than by intimacy, actual intercourse, if I have consciousness into it. So two people with no knowledge of Tantra, put aside all the fancy, oh, isn't Tantra the making love for hours, and isn't it where you use a lot of sex positions? No, that's also a lot of misunderstandings about it. But what it is as follows. Slow down. Just, if you know nothing else, and you make love with your partner as slowly and intimately as possible. Yes, it would help if you, you know, sit down and say, you know, I'm really looking forward to this intimacy. Usually we just kind of get to it. And I just want to say first, you know, you can be humble and playful and just say, I want to be sincere here. You know, I'm a little scared sometimes about trying these new things like slowing down. You know, just be honest and humble. You can also spend a moment appreciating and saying, you know, we do a lot of things together. And I've known you for a long time, and I don't know if I've told you lately what I appreciate about you. And it's totally from the heart. Just tell them, you know, I really honor this and that. And mind you, even in not so successful relationships, you got a lot of water under the bridge, a lot of hurt feelings. But it wouldn't hurt to forget the four things you don't like right now and comment on the one you still appreciate about them. If you and I have a relationship, and that one thing can nurture and be fanned into a flame from an ember, fanned into a flame, it'll burn away the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth item that I had called negative before. We might have a relationship profoundly changed from where we were. If I have no little ember still burning that could be fanned into a flame, then I shouldn't be making love with you. I'm not telling your listeners what to do and not do with their partners. I'm saying I would not do it. I would say, obviously, if we don't have that, now, if the ember that is there, it's better than not being there, but still can't be fanned into a flame, I wouldn't say I won't be there, but I would definitely question what I'm doing. And, of course, add a second ember, add a flame that's burning brighter and brighter. As long as I see progress in my relationship, I would still be willing to refer to it as sacred and going into that direction more and more. But if it's lacking that sacredness, there's not a loving respect and so on, I really am going to think twice about what I'm doing and perhaps get to a point where if we can't pull it off, I'm not going to go there. But ultimately, just slow down. Yes, try communicating and loving and so on and honoring each other. And technique-wise, slow down. Make love to where you feel every possible sensation. It's an intimate, loving, respectful thing. It is not a hypersexual thing. And some people think, well, that... Some guys say, well, gosh, if I go slow, will I be able to maintain arousal? You might not, so you just speed up for a little while, get your arousal back, and then come back. But you can also talk to your partner about what that brings up, man. Wow, this really challenges me. I'm afraid that I'm going to lose erection. And let your partner talk to you about it, and that's kind of a cool thing to share and talk about. But you can also speed it up for a moment and regain your stimulation and then slow down again. Sometimes we think if we go slow, we will not have as much pleasure. That is not true. You won't have as much fire, which in the yogic traditions is referred to what we call in the West hot sex. If you ask anybody on the street, "Hi, have you ever had hot sex?" Even if they haven't, they would say they wish they could. If they've had it, they'll say, "Oh my God, it's the best." If they talk about hot sex scenes in movies, name your best favorite sex scenes in any movie. They're going to refer to movies that include hot sex scenes.
But they're going really fast, right?
Yeah, well, it's intensity.
Okay.
And so it's called fire. So in the yogic tradition, the word hot means shallow, meaning like materialistic, shallow, base, nothing. There's no quality to it. So they don't, in the Eastern tradition, you're recommended to go cool and warm to deepen your sexual experience, not hot. So the Western people love fast food and hot sex, and both of them are basically the unhealthiest you can experience. You want something that takes time. You want to connect more. You want to be there more. You want to feel more. So the sensations for some people might seem like they could be less pleasurable. And even if it's true for a while, it won't stay that way. As you deepen your experience, the intimacy, the pleasure, and all of it enhances way beyond what hot, stimulating sex could look like. And I'm not saying don't do hot. I'm saying start off with slow in any intimate time, or sometimes just fully stay slow for the entire intimate moment. But when you're intimate, at any time, you can also choose just to speed up, to be passionate and playful, because that's great. But know how to come back and find your partner again. Don't get into doing them. Don't get into doing their body and doing them, doing something to them. Be with them and notice their feelings. Notice what's happening. Something I talk about in I think both books, but it's what I refer to as the levels of orgasm. And your, silly magazines and the newsstands. God, they're always telling, especially women, what they're missing out on. Have you had an orgasm? If you haven't, you're not a complete woman, you know? Mm-hmm. Or now that you've had one, have you had more than one? If you're not multiply, orgasmic, then you're not a complete woman. And pretty soon it's something else and something. It just so they can sell you the magazine so that you can figure out how to be more complete. They taunt you with what you're not or what you don't have so that you buy theirs to get some of it, so to speak. And I'm saying, no. Listen, slow down. Your body will awaken with slowing down and with a safe partner. Some people, yes, they get more aroused with people that aren't so safe. They like edgy, but that's actually addictive behavior. So just like drugs can make you feel good, it's in a stimulating, altering kind of a way, doesn't mean it's healthy. So we can slow down, we can speed up, be passionate and playful, find your partner again, slow down again, connect with them again, and then speed up again, but talk, connect. And what will happen potentially is not only will you learn to have really amazing orgasmic experiences, but the orgasms aren't just explosive orgasms. There's something else. There's different kinds. So there's explosive physical orgasms, but there's also energetic orgasms where the body just opens up and all kinds of, fireworks. Wow, it's amazing. But there's also emotional orgasms, which have to be honored and desired just as much as the others, which is sometimes we're with somebody that we feel so much connection with, we shed a tear. I call that an emotional orgasm. We shed a tear because of the depth and connection. Other times, because of the proper connection or whatever, the healing that's happening, the tears that are shed are not tears of joy and connection. They're tears of regret and loss, you know, hurts from the past. And that is incredible. And the partner to the man or woman that sheds those tears should be completely encouraging and go, oh, that's amazing. And well, not lots of words, but just like, that is amazing. Are you okay? How are you feeling? You know, let me hold you. Oh, that's beautiful. And you hold instead of doing things like sexual and thrusting. You hold and you dance by just holding each other. You dance not in intercourse. You dance in connectedness. So it's quite beautiful. So there's, of course, soul-level orgasms, which is sort of all aspects of the other, and spiritual orgasm, which is, in a sense, what Osho was saying. It's beyond biology. It's a spiritual... Well, here's how I would say it. The soul-level orgasm is really also beyond biology. It's a soul experience, but it's still not a spiritual experience. The distinction of a spiritual orgasm has nothing to do with you and your body raising up, per se. It's actually when, I call it, the hand of God reaches down and sort of energetically triggers you. I mean, for lack of a better phrase, it's when the spirit of, you know, of God, the consciousness of spirit reaches through and quickens you. So it's not so much a biological or an energetic or even a soul-level experience or a full-body experience. It's actually when you're so open and in a state of surrender and vulnerability. It happens to it's happened to people who are completely chaste, celibate, people that are, you know, young people, old people, male, female. It's almost like the state of ecstasy that people go into when they're in trance, like spiritual hypnotic trance or spiritual trance, rather. You know, visionaries, people that have seen Mother Mary or whatever, they go into these trances. It's like that. It's a spiritual ecstasy, and it can be called orgasmic simply because you are in a state of spiritual ecstasy, but it's not biological in any sense. The biology might be experiencing something, but it's something, there's a line you cross when, and it's not you crossing upwards to heavens as much as the hand of heaven reaches down and sort of quickens you, touches your heart and soul, and becomes a spontaneous experience. That is in itself another level of orgasm.
Wow, this is fabulous. I'm sure people are curious, like, about, you have a number of these books, and I saw one website, the grailproductions.com, but I don't know, is that the best place to go to get the books and find out more about what you're doing?
Well, folks can Google, you know, my name, or, you know, look for a website or something like that through my name, but yes, my primary website is Grail, like the Holy Grail, G-R-A-I-L, productions.com. They can order books there. They can get books on Amazon and so forth. Bookstores can order from New Leaf primarily. But but my books, you can get them from my website. Any of them are on there. I think I have 5 or 6 books. And they can get things there, and they can find out also my itinerary, where I'm at, where I'm teaching. I just took on a position for a year or so as what they call a spiritual leader at the Unity Center in Sedona, Arizona.
Oh.
So I'm here half a month, and then I'm on the road half a month, roughly. So I'm still on the road visiting everywhere, you know, D.C., or I'll be in Boston in about a week, and it could be Fort Lauderdale, it could be Southern California. I'm all over every month somewhere, and sometimes overseas. But my itinerary is on my website. They can also read articles and so forth. Those are on there as well. And a couple of YouTube kind of clips, I think, are on there, and so on.
Oh, excellent. It's so interesting when you're talking about slowing down. I've been noticing, for instance, I like juices, and sometimes I'm very thirsty, and I'll just gulp it down, and I get some of the flavor, but most of it is just gulped down, and I have one experience that's kind of fast, and it's over. And if I can slow myself down and savor it and sip a little bit of it, I notice that with each sip, I get a wonderful flavor burst. But if I'm gulping it, I only get basically one flavor. burst of the item, and then the rest of it is just gulped on down. So it's to me, I don't know if that makes any sense in terms of some of what you're trying to share.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's a perfect metaphor. The bottom line is, when people eat quickly like that, or when they drink quickly like that, first of all, they're far from having an experience with what they're eating or drinking. Or if it's a sexual experience, they're far from having a true sacred experience. What they're doing is feeding. And look what they're doing. They're hungry and they're thirsty. What that tells us is they're needing something. And when you put the metaphor now across to sex, it means, I need you. I'm hungry and I'm thirsty. I want you now as quickly as possible. You will quench my thirst. And it'll all be categorized as one sip or one feeding. It won't be a savored experience. And if you think about that from a metaphor of drink and food, clearly it's the same. The experience is lost in the thirst and the hunger, and therefore the speed. Slow down and experience. And if you don't want to, that's fine. Don't call it sacred, though. Don't call it sacred. It's not sacred. It can't be called sacred. So, and again, some teachers and practitioners, they even know how to slow down the experience. That doesn't mean it's still sacred. Just slowing it down, I'm saying, to people that are, lay folks that don't know one way or the other, that's the thing they can practice with absolute integrity and sincerity. Slow down, and you've got the primary technique. Yes, there's all kinds of positions and so on that you can do to enhance the experience, and there's ways to extend the time period together, communication, and so many other things you can add. I'm just saying to the average couple, instead of thinking, well, I got to read 5 books and I got to do 2 workshops and I got to watch a video here and there, if you start off just that in itself, you'll learn so much. Yes, read the book, try a workshop or whatever you want to do, but practice that slowing down. That's the ultimate technique. It doesn't replace learning anything else. It's just a great start. Connect with each other and slow down. That's the first and foremost, that's the beginning and ending of all the techniques. But that that element of, just because some practitioners say, well, I know how to slow down, so therefore that means it's tantric. No, it doesn't mean it's sacred just because you've slowed down. If I'm talking to a practitioner, a person that does tantra, or teaches it or practices with people, I would no longer say, just slow down. No, I would go back to, again, they need to learn the loving respect, the safety, and all these other pieces. Especially if you're calling yourself a teacher or facilitator, you need to be practicing those stages, or it is not sacred. I'm just saying that to couples, slowing down is a good start to learn to make it sacred.
Ah, okay. Well, that to me, that's handy, because in the midst of a civilization that, has, in my opinion, has been so deprived of quality human interaction, there's this huge amount of pornography and lust, and people just wanting some form of contact to get some relief from the loneliness. And it's like, well, wait a minute, here, you've just shared at least one of the keys. It's like, wait, if you do nothing more, then slow down. It's not the whole thing that you can learn from studying with you, but it's certainly going to move you in the right direction.
That's correct. And pornography is just the same as any other addiction. It feeds off of one's emptiness, one's issues, one's brokenness, and so on. I have a line you probably have read, but in my book. But one comment I make is, some people think that sex, they teach and they just say, oh, sex is just amazing. The more sex you have, the more openness and this and that. And they're praising the act itself. And I just say, listen, if sex in itself were sacred, then porn stars would be enlightened, and they are not.
Uh-huh.
Why are they not enlightened if sex in itself is so amazing?
Yeah.
It is not the act. It's the intentions behind it. You can meditate and not have proper technique or intentions, and you're not getting anywhere. You're just meditating. You're just doing some technique. It doesn't mean you're going to have any authentic experience. You're just sitting there. You clear your mind. Great. But it doesn't mean anything authentic or profound is happening. And you can have the act of sex, and you can have the act of eating, and you can have the act of drinking. You can have the act of parenting, and so on and so on. Just because you're a parent does not mean you're a good parent.
Yeah,
right?
It's exactly
the same thing. It's the quality of the experience. So slow down, and not just the act, but slow down and get to know. I mean, when your children are talking, slow down. Talk, look at them, eye contact. When partners are sharing, you know, do your best. Slow down, connect. How's it going? What's happening? And physical touch is a great way of connecting, of creating intimacy and so on.
Mm, that's wonderful. Now, when you're mentioning intimacy, can you share a little bit of what you find are some of the most common reasons that couples lose their passion for one another or for intimacy in general?
Well, first of all, there's too much water under the bridge at times. Sometimes there's a saying, you know, that relationships don't end, they're murdered, you know. Love doesn't just fade away. Love is murdered. We destroy it. So sometimes the intimacy fades because we've destroyed the desirability. In other words, if I tell you you're getting fat, you know, you're letting yourself go, or you don't make enough money, or whatever, I am destroying your desire for me. So you will not desire me. You will not crave me. Healthy or unhealthy, it doesn't, in this moment, you will not feel that for me. You'll not crave, you'll not love, desire, or anything for me in that regard. So that will fade away. Of course, sometimes improper techniques and the loss of the how-to, or sometimes it becomes stale. We're not trying things. We're not being playful and spontaneous. There's, you know, these are things you'd read almost anywhere because it's so common that people, you know, lose connection. But it's if you keep a love and a sincerity and good communication, basically what I say is if you want your partner to desire you, make them feel desirable. And the chances are it will be reciprocated almost always. But intimacy, you know, sometimes there's too many wounds and we lose the connection. We lose, you know, because intimacy means into me see. And it's where I open my heart and you get to know me. There's a test I can do almost every couple. You know, I can ask this question. I've been asking this question. I've been teaching for over 30 years. I've asked this question a lot. I promise you that. And I don't think in one time I've ever heard the answer yes when I've asked couples the following. Do you know your partner's greatest desire, meaning aspiration, and do you know their greatest fear? If you do not, you are lacking intimacy. What is their greatest aspiration? What is their greatest fear? Why wouldn't you know that? Why wouldn't you want to know that? God, if you're partners, how could you imagine that, you know? And I think parents should ask their children. I mean, lovingly, tactfully. I don't mean sit them down and, what is your greatest fear, Johnny? You know? I mean, you should just know it. And just be loving and parenting. And, you know, what do you want most in your life? Oh, that's really beautiful. Make it casual. You know, make it clear and understanding. You know, is there anything you're afraid of? Wow. Oh, you know, I used to be afraid of that too, or whatever. Make it real casual. But when we care about people, we should know their soul. You know, there should just be that desire to know. I desire to know you. And I mean the greatest and the least part of you. And communication is a really big part, man, of, you know, of intimacy. Intimacy means connection. So whether it's eye contact during a conversation, whether it's I understand what you mean, whether it's I listen instead of interrupting you, whether it's touch, affection, you know, whatever it is, there's so many pieces or different spokes to that wheel. But, you know, the actual intimacy and affection and connection, they're all the same word, really. They're all synonymous.
Wow. Michael, this is so profound, what you're doing. As you were sharing that, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, to be that way with someone, to get to know what they want most, what's bothering them the most, these things, to me, and to have a conversation where that's open and there's a good feeling in the whole conversation, I'm sitting there going, well, geez, that's like sounds like unconditional love. And then I think, okay, well, the major religions on the planet seem to be talking not so much about unconditional love as much about this God that you have to fear. Because if you don't do things in a particular way, you're going to go to this really bad place.
Sure.
Or you're going to lose this love. And so, wow, how exciting to be interacting with people from this place that you're talking about.
Well, and adding to that, here's a funny little tidbit where we can blend the conversation of, believe it or not, you know, religion, heaven and hell, all that, we can, and, you know, even the devil, we can bridge all of that with the conversation of sacred sexuality and just about anything else. And here's how. In a book that a lot of people know of, it's called The Divine Comedy of Dante. In the Divine Comedy, this you know, amazing you know, book, it's kind of a story, mythology, trance experience that this guy Dante has. And he goes and he describes being taken by a guide. And I think Beatrice was her name. Slips me right now, but I think Beatrice, and she takes him to the other worlds, and there's three. There's the Inferno, Dante's Inferno, there's Purgatory, and there's Heaven, or Paradise, and he's taken through all realms. Well, when he goes into Hell, and he goes through the different levels of Hell, what they find, where they find the devil and all that, you know, the deepest part of Hell isn't all just fiery as people think. Hell is a lake, and the devil is in the middle of the lake, and he's stuck in the lake from the waist down. So he's frozen in the lake. It's a frozen lake. And in this lake are the body parts of all beings or whatever that ever were cast there. So the moral of the story, if I can summarize, is simply this. Any part of you, and notice, waist down, the devil was frozen. Okay? And the any part of you that is frozen is already in hell, you see.
So, oh, boy. Michael, this is so amazing.
So imagine that any part of you, that means if you and I are friends and there's something about you that you cannot tell me, you, my friend, are already in hell. That part of you is already living in hell. If you're my, you know, if I've got a partner and my partner can't tell me something, that part of that partner is in hell, but that part of our relationship is technically frozen, which means it's already in hell. It is not living. Any part of us that is not living, we're talking about true living, loving, any part of us that is not fully alive is therefore either numb, which you could call purgatory, or is frozen and dead, and dead, which is hell.
This is amazing. We have... I want you to help us come to life, and I wish we had another hour. We've blazed through our program, and I'm just feeling like we're just scratching the surface.
Not to worry.
I would love to have you come on another time, because I think we're just so much more to share if you'd be willing to do that.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. We'll get that scheduled, and just, Michael, thank you so much for all your sharing. My beloved listeners, go to grailproductions.com, check out what he's doing, make your life better. Just thank you again so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. We hope to see you soon.
Oh, thank you. And to you, Michael, and to my beloved listeners, God bless, and goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.
Let go of it, God. Let myself lose and let go of it. Let it go.